Part 4, Chapter 8. The following day, Turl was again a blur of activity. He was getting ready for another interview with Numph. He rushed about doing mutiny interviews, recording each one on a type of tape that could be cut and spliced. It was a very artful task, requiring the greatest care. He approached numbers of employees on the job, inside the compound and out. The interviews went very smoothly and rapidly. Turl would ask,
"What company regulations do you know concerning mutiny?"
The employees, sometimes startled, always suspicious, would quote what they knew or thought they knew concerning mutiny. The security chief would then request,
"In your own words, tell me your opinion of mutiny."
The employees would of course get long-winded and reassuring. Mutiny is a very bad thing. Executives would cause vaporizations wholesale, and no one would be safe. I sure never intend to advocate or take part in any mutiny. The interviews went on and on through the day. Turl rushing about, mask on outside, mask off inside. Recording, recording, recording. He always wound up an interview shaking his head and smiling and saying it was just routine and they knew how it was with management being what it was, and he, Turl, was on the employees' side. But he left a bit of worry in his wake. Employees vowing to themselves to have nothing whatever to do with any mutiny, pay cut or no pay cut. From time to time, passing through his office, Turl would look at the image of the cage where the high-button cameras still performed their guard duty. Curiosity and a vague unease made him keep checking. The animal seemed very industrious. It had been up with first light. It had worked and worked, scraping the bear hide clean, and had taken old ashes and worked them into it. The hide was now hanging, pinned to the bars. Then the fire had been built up and an odd network of branches, sort of racks, had been made around the fireplace. The beef was cut into long, thin strips and hung on the racks near the fire. Leaves from the chopped-up trees kept being put on the fire, creating a great deal of smoke, and the smoke was winding around the meat. Turl could not quite make out what the animal was really doing, but toward the end of the day, he thought he knew. The animal was observing some kind of religious ritual having to do with spring. He had read something about this in the Chinko guidebooks. They had dances and other silly things. The smoke was supposed to carry the spirits of slain animals to the gods. Yesterday, they had certainly slain enough animals. The thought of it made Turl's back twinge. He had never believed any of these earth creatures could actually hurt a cyclo. But that grizzly bear had shaken his confidence slightly. It had been an awfully big bear. It weighed almost as much as Turl himself. Probably come sunset, the animal down there in the cage would build the fire up and begin to dance or something. He concluded it wasn't up to anything dangerous and kept on with his headlong interviewing. That night, the recreation hall saw nothing of Turl, and he also forgot to see whether the animal danced. He was too busy with his tapes. Working with an expertise only a trained security chief cherished, Turl was editing tapes, slicing out single words and even phrases and juggling them about. By his readjusting of word positions and scrapping of whole paragraphs, employees began to say things on the reels that were building up that could hang them. A typical answer would become, "I intend to advocate mutiny. In any mutiny, it would be safe to vaporize executives." It was painstaking work, and the reels built up. Finally, he copied them onto new, clean disks that would show no sign of editing or splicing, and with the east graying, he sat back, finished. Yawning, he puttered around, cleaning up, destroying the originals and the scraps, waiting for breakfast time. He realized he had forgotten to keep an eye on the animal to see whether it danced. Turl decided he needed sleep more than breakfast and laid himself down for a short nap. His appointment with Numph was not until after lunch. Later, he was to tell himself that it was because he had missed both breakfast and lunch that he made the blunder. The interview began well enough. Numph was sitting at his upholstered desk, sucking at an after-lunch saucepan of Kerbango. He was his usual bumbling self.
I have the results of the investigation you requested.
Turl began.
What?
I interviewed a lot of local employees.
About what?
Mutiny.
Numph was immediately alert. Turl put the disc player on Numph's desk and made ready to play the interviews, saying,
These are all very secret, of course. The employees were told that no one would hear about it, and they did not know the interviews were recorded.
Wise, wise,
said Numph. He had laid the saucepan aside and was all attention. Turl let the disc spin one after another. The effect was everything he had hoped for. Numph looked grayer and grayer. When the discs were finished, Numph poured himself a saucepan full of Kerbango and sucked it down in one whoosh. Then he just sat there. If ever he had seen guilt, Turl decided, he was seeing it now. Numph's eyes were hunted.
Therefore, I advise that we keep all this secret. We must not let them know what each is actually thinking, for it would lead them to conspire and actually mutiny.
Yes.
Good. I have prepared certain papers and orders about this.
He put the sheaf on Numph's desk.
The first one is an order to me to take what measures I deem necessary to handle this matter.
Yes.
Said Numph and signed it.
The second one is to strip all arsenals of all mine sites and keep all weapons under lock and key.
Yes,
said Numph and signed it.
This next one is to retrieve any battle planes from other mine sites and localize them under seals, except those I might need.
Yes,
said Numph and signed it. Turl removed that which had been signed and left Numph staring at the next one.
What's this?
Authority to round up and train man-animals on machine operation so that company ore shipments can be kept rolling in event of deaths of company employees or refusals to work.
I don't think it's possible.
It's only a threat to force employees back to work. You know, and I know, it's not really feasible.
Numph signed it doubtfully, and only because it said, Emergency plan, strategic alternative ploy, objective, employee dissuasion from strike. And then, Turl made his blunder. He took the signed authorization and added it to the rest.
It permits us to handle forced reduction of employees,
he commented. Afterward, he realized he need not have said a thing.
Oh?
Said Numph.
And I am sure,
Turl had gone on, confirming his blunder.
I am very certain that your nephew Nipe would heartily approve of it.
Approve of what?
Reduction of employee numbers.
Turl rattled on. And then Turl saw it. There was a relieved look on Numph's face, a knowing look, a look of realization that gave Numph great satisfaction.
Yeah.
Numph gave Turl an almost amused glance. Relief seemed to soak into him. Confidence took the place of fear. Turl knew he had messed it up. He had had only a hint of the leverage connected to Nipe. And right now, he had been guilty of exposing that he was only pretending he knew. Numph knew that Turl really didn't know. And Turl never had really known what Numph was up to. A real blunder.
Well,
said Numph, suddenly expansive.
You just run along now and do your job. I'm sure everything will work out just fine.
Turl stopped outside the door. What the blast was the leverage? What was the real story behind it? Numph was no longer afraid. Turl could hear him chuckling. The security chief threw off the black cloud that threatened. He moved off. At least he had the animals, and he could carry on. And when he had finished with them, he could vaporize them. He wished he could also vaporize Numph. Leverage. Leverage! He had none on Numph, and he had none at all on the animal. Turl would have to get busy.